What's up, everybody? It's a Weird, Fat, and Sober podcast. It's been a little bit. I haven't been here in a while. It's been a busy period of my life, school, everything else. Today, my guest is Jeremy Couture. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man?
Chilling, dude. How you doing?
Pretty good. Busy.
Yeah.
Tired.
Yeah. It's a full-time gig, playing a lot and planning a festival and doing a lot, right?
Totally. Yeah. Like, way more than I was expecting.
Right. So, I guess we can kind of get right into it. I mean, I guess, you know, I know you had planned this festival like a year ago, right?
Two
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then COVID kind of derailed you, right?
Yeah. Our first one was going to be last year. But then it didn't, cause COVID. That was kind of rough. It sucked, but definitely a blessing in disguise because it gave me an extra year to plan. And, I kind of realized this year that there are people who get degrees in event planning.
Yeah.
And now I get why.
Yeah. It's a full-time gig, I would imagine.
Yes.
Just in like, you know, I booked our tour last year and it took me 6 months just to like line up 7 shows, you know, in different cities that I didn't know everybody. So I can't imagine lining up. How many acts is it?
12 on the plaza, and then there's 4 over at Two Docks.
Wow, that's a lot. So
the bands were easy to get together. It's other stuff that's more difficult, and I think it's probably just because I know all of the bands
right
from just doing other stuff, and I'm friends with those people. So it was like, hey man, you want to come play this show?
Yeah. Right.
So that was easier. The hard part is like the government and
damn government.
Yeah, and money, getting money.
Oh, yeah. So when you say government, do you mean like permits and everything like that?
That's part of it, but yeah, it's like jumping through a lot of hoops. Yeah. So it's permits, but also we got our 501c3 tax exempt status.
That's so sick that you were able to do that.
Yeah, it was a long and difficult process, and a lot of waiting,
right?
And trying not to go crazy while you're waiting because it's like, I need this to do all of the things I need to do, but I've done everything I can, so now I just have to twiddle my thumbs until I get a piece of mail,
right?
And so, and then it's like every piece of mail I get, I'm like, is this the one?
Yeah, I can feel that. I think that's probably my favorite part about this event that you're doing is that all of the proceeds are going to benefit the arts and the community around Lubbock, right? I mean, what does that look like as far as like, where is that going to go?
Yeah. So each year, I mean, this is going to be our first year, but it's going to be an annual event.
Yeah.
I plan for it to be an annual event at least.
Yeah.
And, we're going to donate to a different local arts program each year. And this first year, we have decided to donate to Lubbock Independent School District's Fine Arts Department.
Right.
So I grew up in Lubbock and was a cellist. And I started in 7th grade playing cello at Evans Middle School. Then I eventually went all the way on to get my degree in cello performance from Tech in 2016. And then I started, while I was at Tech, and then until now, I've been teaching supplemental sectionals and cello lessons in LISD.
Right.
So, like, I know pretty firsthand the budgets and, or, you know, sometimes lack thereof.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I feel like that's the hard part about music is it's not a cheap hobby, especially classical music and cello, and those instruments are like very expensive. And it's sad to know that there are some kids out there who probably never got to experience music or learn how to play an instrument just because of they didn't have the means, you know? And so I think that's really cool that's kind of what this thing is aiming for, right? Is like just help kids get where they need to be so they can become musicians and just give them the funds and the funding to get what they need. Right. I mean, essentially.
Yeah, that was the thought behind giving to LISD. Also, the purpose of the whole event, there's like two. One is I wanted to be able to, I hate the word showcase, but kind of take the arts scenes, not just music, but like music, art, theater, dance, all of it, and kind of make one event and have a place where people could, the average local could know about it.
Right.
Because I hear all the time, Lubbock's boring, there's nothing to do here. But it's like, well, that's not true. There is a lot to do. It's just sometimes it's difficult to find. Mm-hmm. And since I spent the time finding it, I wanted to make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. Especially because it's so quality, like high quality. I think actually Indigo was one of the bands that I was listening to when I had a thought about it.
So but, I get to take credit, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, I was just like, I was like, man, this band is dope.
Thanks, man.
And there's like four people here, and that made me mad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one cool thing about the Lubbock music scene is that there is a pretty diverse array of, types of music and genre and types of bands and stuff like, and if you were to try to go to shows that are like heavily publicized and like, you know, advertised, it's like mostly metal. Nothing wrong with that. I go to metal shows all the time, but it just sucks that like that's the one, that's all that people think that there is here. And there's like a great house show circuit of like, you know, surf rock band type stuff and like just the house show bands. And and then there's, you know, like there's a bunch of good Texas country. There's just all this other stuff. And it's like, it seems like your event's kind of unifying a lot of that, really. Like you're kind of, I haven't looked at the whole lineup, but it seems like you're kind of pulling from each little sector and bringing them all together for one cohesive thing.
Yeah, I definitely wanted multiple genres for sure. Like it could have been really easy to just do all country.
But yeah.
Like so easy.
Yeah.
I could throw a rock and hit a country player with a guitar.
Right. Yeah, and I said metal, but it's metal and country mostly that like the two big things here. And there's all this other stuff, but mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, that's really cool. And you said that you started off playing cello in middle school. So what's your like earliest memory of just music in general?
Ooh. My earliest memory, at least with cello, actually, was 7th grade. So my house was within walking distance from Evans Middle School. And I would carry my cello home with me. And one time I was walking home and I dropped it.
Oh,
and like it kept kind of hitting the ground as I was walking back. And then I got home and I unzipped it and the peg had come completely out of the of the cello. And I remember freaking out.
Yeah.
That's like one of my first memories. Just
the
like,
peg with a stand at the bottom.
Up at the top of so there's the fine tuners at the bottom that are small, right. And then there's the big pegs
right.
at the top where the scroll is,
right.
And that one had like completely unraveled and fallen out.
Oh,
and I remember I was like 7th grade, didn't know how to tune it back at that point, yeah. So I was like losing my mind. I was like, I just broke this. My teacher's gonna murder me. Yeah, actually, that's like one of my first memory that just sticks in my head to this day.
Right. That's great. So is there anybody in your family that's musicians, or are you just kind of there by yourself? Or
no, actually most of the people in my family all are musically inclined. I'm the only one that went into it as a profession.
Right.
Yeah, two of my brothers are drummers, guitar players, singers. One of them is just a guitar player and a singer. My sister dabbles in piano and is a pretty decent singer. And I'm saying decent, Katie, in case you're listening to this, decent.
He's calling you out, Katie. he's trying to say that he's the best singer in the band or in the family. So,
yeah. My mom plays some guitar and sings.
Sick.
Yeah. My dad is, I wouldn't say, he doesn't really play a whole lot, but I mean, used to. There's a picture of him with a guitar in like the 60s or something.
Nice.
70s, actually.
Yeah.
They apparently called him three-chord couture or something like that.
How do you actually say your name? I've never asked you.
Okay. Well, so my dad says, and my family say couture, and that's, I'm sorry, but it's wrong. It's couture.
Yeah. Couture sounds more.
That's how it's pronounced.
Right.
In France. Like, couture, the fashion line.
Yeah.
It is a French word. We are French Canadian.
Yeah.
It's couture.
Yeah. Did anybody in school call you Coochie?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, oh, that's the worst.
Your name's Jeremy Cooter.
Of course, bro. Kids are fucking brutal.
I was like, dude, you're so original and funny.
Yeah. They always think
like
that.
I've never heard that before.
I started to do when people were like, what's up, Dan the Man? I go, dude, did you just come up with that? Like, I put this whole shocked look on my face. I'm like, I've never heard that. They go, are you serious? I'm like, no, dude, it's great. How? Dude, you're so smart. And they'd be like, oh, that's kind of, it's a little mean, but it's, I don't know.
A nickname I had in elementary school was Smoocher Coocher.
That's great.
Smoocher Coocher.
You know what, though? We need that kind of shit, right?
Like, yeah.
Bullying's good, bro. Bullying makes us better people. You know what I mean? There'll always be something like that in our society, you know? And it's, I think it's good. Because if you don't get bullied a little bit, you probably grow up to be like...
entitled?
Super entitled.
Does nobody put you down?
Yeah. Now I put me down.
I'm the best at putting myself down.
Same, dude. I'll beat the shit out of myself. Like, it's like, you know, when they get jumped into a game, I do that shit all in my head to myself.
Every morning.
No. So how long have you been full-time, totally professional musician now?
We are coming up on... it'll be 4 years. This month.
Okay.
4 years. Well, I think it'll be the start of the fourth year.
Yeah.
This year. This April.
I remember because we met before. I think you were just waiting tables the last gig you had, right? Like job you had. Is that what it was?
Or was it something? Maybe else? I was working at a gym.
Maybe that's what it was.
Body Works. I was a front desk guy. They gave me a free gym membership, so.
I feel like I've known you about 4 years. I don't really remember where we met, but.
I'm pretty sure I met y'all at one of your shows.
Yeah.
Because for like, I spent like about a year just researching and going to every show I could.
Right.
Staying till the end and then introducing myself to all the musicians, which worked.
Yeah. Shit up. Pretty much everybody knows you. I mean, I don't, you know. I mean, we're a pretty close-knit group, I think. Like, I feel like most of us musicians in Lubbock know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Except for maybe some, you know, some of the... I may not know all of the metal band guys, but I know at least somebody in them. And
yeah, at least one person.
Yeah. So it's a pretty close-knit group of people. But yeah, I mean, we've played together. I've filled in for you. Not very good or anything.
Oh,
but
whatever, bro.
But we played a bunch of shows together, you know, and it's cool to see. You know, I remember you talking like, I'm about to really give this thing my all and really, you know, put my whole focus into it, and it's been working. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I envy that. You know, I still work. I mean, I love my job. I work now, and it's part of my passion. I work in a treatment center, and I get to help people get sober. But it's just awesome that you're full-time playing music. You know, I know that's like probably really freeing because, I mean, you know, most of your days you can just spend writing, recording, practicing, play however many nights a week you play. And that's pretty sick, dude.
I have the capability of doing those things, yes.
Yeah. It's just actually sitting down and doing them is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my days are filled with festival putting together now.
Right.
But
that's good, though.
Yeah. It's definitely become a full day job that right. has. But, yeah, it was a test over 2020 to stay full-time musician.
Yeah.
I did it. I made rent.
Yeah.
I'm insanely proud of that.
That's awesome.
It's partly why I got this tattoo.
Hell yeah.
And that it's goes onto my hand. Cause
now you're full. Now you're dedicated, bro.
Yeah,
that was
the thought process. I was like, man, I made it through 2020 as a full-time musician. I'm getting a tattoo that goes onto my hand.
Yeah.
I mean,
just get a face tattoo.
Now I don't think anybody really... it's getting more to where people don't super care about that on your hand, so it doesn't really matter as much as if it was like 2010 or something. But it was the sentiment.
I think hand tattoos are like the least thing that people care about. It's just like, do you have face tattoos? Like, as long as you don't have face tattoos, I think you're fine to work in a corporate world. But I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'll never work in a corporate world, but now I'm doing this festival and it's like, okay, well, I actually have to do talk to these people, but most of the people I'm talking to are arts people.
Yeah,
so it's like,
makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah, they're cool with they. Yeah, And it's a fucking beautiful piece.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Nine hours. Noel Mendoza from the Brand Tattoo Studio did this. Shouts out.
That was your first tattoo, right?
Second.
Okay.
This one was my first.
Yeah. It's dope. I'm the master of my feet. I'm the captain of my soul. It's dope.
Invictus poem, William Henley.
Nice.
He wrote that after getting his leg amputated.
Brutal.
Apparently. Or so Google says.
Gotta trust a goog, bro. Gotta give it a goog every once in a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also you got an album coming out soon, right?
April 30th.
Sick. Mm-hmm. So just in a couple weeks.
Yeah, 7 songs. I've been working on it for 3 fucking years.
Yeah. Did you track it at Crossroads?
No, I did it all home.
Damn, nice.
Yep. I got a bunch of really great local musicians on it. Harvey did the drum parts for 5 of the songs.
Dope.
Aaron Smith did Lullaby and... He's gonna kill me. I'm blanking my name for my other drummer. That's okay.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
I ran into somebody the other day at the vape shop that I had met before, and I forgot their name, and I had to ask what their name was.
Matt Wimberly. I'm sorry. There it is. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Matt.
That felt so bad. I was like, oh my god, dude, I'm so sorry. I knew who he was. I just didn't click in my head. And I was like, what's your name? And he was like, dude, it's me. And I was just like, fuck, I'm sorry. Like, I knew who it was, but I just.
Hey, you.
Yeah. I don't even know your name, man. So, I mean, with, you know, playing music at night, let me ask you this, because this is a mostly recovery podcast. And here's the thing that I've been realizing as of late. I mean, I've known it for a long time, but. And we don't have to go off on this tangent too far, but I'm just curious. I've realized lately that a lot of people, almost everybody, I would, you know, bet that 98% of people at one time or another in their life struggle with substance, disordered substance use, or some kind of problem related to substance use, whether that's drinking a little bit too much, too many days in a row, or too many months in a row. We're doing a little bit too much coca or whatever, you know, whatever that means in this. So being in the bars constantly, being, you know, free to just kind of do what you want. Has there ever been a point in your life where you've been like, oh shit, I've drank the last 4 nights. I need to chill. Like, I know that, you know, you're a normal dude as far as that. Like, I've never seen you struggle with anything like that. But has there been any point in your life, especially since you've just been playing music, where you have to kind of like, oh, I'm kind of going a little too hard in the paint here?
Last year.
During COVID?
Uh-huh.
Good reason to fucking drink.
And it wasn't even the bars. I mean, the last time, so pre-COVID, I think the first year when I was fully gigging full time, I was drinking a lot, but it didn't seem too much of a problem, but more just I got fatter. And I stopped to lose some weight.
Yeah.
After like a year, because I was like, man, I've been drinking so much beer, and I've gained like 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was mostly that. But 2020, I got depressed. Because I lost all my gigs, and I had to push my festival back, and I had been broken up with, and. And so it was like every weekend. Well, it was like getting to a nice buzz pretty much every night.
Yeah.
And then every weekend, So I recently just starting March decided to take a break until May.
From everything.
Yeah.
Nice. That's dope, dude.
Yeah. Well, I've had like 2 beers, and I had like a drink earlier at arts thing I was doing, because I wanted to have one with everybody else having one. Felt like whatever.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it just hasn't been like a lot of drinks. Right. It's only been like one. every like once in a while over these 2 months, because I definitely felt myself getting into a cycle.
Yeah.
Like the first weekend that after I decided I'm not going to drink anymore, I like wanted to drink. Like it, like Friday rolled around and I was like, man, I really feel an urge to drink. And I was like, that is a good reason to not.
That's great.
And so awesome. I was like, okay, obviously I've made a habit, so I definitely need to break it.
Yeah. That's sick, dude. That's really awesome that you, you know, had the insight and foresight to like, you know, look at what you were doing and chill out. And like, that's really commendable. You know what I mean? As a person who doesn't know how to do that, I find it really admirable that you, you know, can be. And it's like, you don't have a job to report to. I mean, you have a job, but it's not the typical 9 to 5. You ain't got to get up early in the morning. Like you have a lot of like, you know, freedom to kind of do what you want as far as that. And you could, you know, you could very easily, and not to, you know, I won't out anybody, but we know some musicians that are giga musicians that are fucking, you know, yeah. they get pretty twisted every night, you know, and it's concerning, you know, but I mean, you know, to thine own self be true. But
well, also kind of honestly, part of it, my dad just got like, I think 8 inches of his colon removed. Not, it's nothing to do with drinking or anything like that. It was other things. But that got me thinking about organs not working properly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I think I should give my liver some time.
Yeah, that's good, man.
Because, you know, I've been watching him recover from that surgery. And I was like, dude, and
I would imagine that's pretty brutal.
Well, I mean, yeah. So, yeah, it was. But so when I'm thinking about 2020, it's like, yeah, I was doing that kind of drinking thing. But I was also doing a lot of inward work.
Yeah.
I got really heavy into meditation and into I would take daily walks and walk around the park and quote unquote talk to the universe or whatever, and just kind of talk about my problems to honestly to the clouds.
Yeah.
And that's work it out in my head and then go and meditate. And I got super into all that. And that's another reason of the chakra tattoo and the guy meditating. So this is kind of like tree of life with the dude meditating and the chakras and then the roots and
whatever. Harmony with everything.
Yeah. Because I started like balancing chakras, and I don't necessarily know if any of that is real or not, but it made me feel better. So, yeah. I guess it helped rather.
Yeah. No, I meditate. I'm all about it. You know, that was really my next topic, was really spirituality. And then, like, you know, for me, like I grew up Christian, like in pretty, like a Pentecostal church, like tongues, all that stuff, you know? So like I grew up pretty spiritual. Like I have my dad who's really spiritual, like believes in prayer, tongues, healing, all of it. And, some of it's, you know, I don't know if I agree with all of it, and I really try to stray away from religion so much, but like, you know, the spirituality aspect of it all. And like, I have a relationship to a higher power, you know, God, the universe, whatever, you know, I kind of think of it all as the same thing, really. It's just the universe, you know, it's just like consciousness and just everything. And you know, I do the same thing. I like talk, you know, and pray, you know, the way I think about it is me just setting intention, setting energy out into the universe, communicating with this thing that is everything, is the cohesive force of everything. You know, I've talked about it a little bit on here. Like I try not to put too many labels on it, but I try to take from everything I can. You know, I love guided meditations. I love like the chakra balancing meditations. I think that stuff, I feel something when I do that, you know, and I try to, like, the way I think about it is like, you know, if I'm seeking God or seeking the universe or enlightenment, like, and if the universe is everything and everything is connected, then like there's a little bit of God in everything, right? There's a little bit of God in every religion, every song, every art, every thing. And we can kind of take and pick what we pick from it and kind of, you know, form this own spirituality for ourselves to benefit, you know, our own consciousness and to get better, you know what I mean? And so, I mean, mine's a little different, I guess, like, but what's your spiritual background? Did you grow up in a household that, you know, practiced religion or anything like that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Grew up non-denominational.
Same.
Christian, tongues.
Yep.
Falling out.
Yeah.
All that jazz. Yeah, I definitely, like, I felt, so kind of how it all went was I grew up real, I wouldn't say strict in that, but as in so much my family forcing me to, but mm-hmm. more like I was strict on myself of doing it type of a deal. Like, this is the thing, this is right, this is all absolutely true 100%. Let me ask you this.
Were you allowed to read Harry Potter?
No.
You need a dog? Hell yeah.
Not when I was younger. When I got older, I was allowed to watch the movies. Yeah. But no.
No, me neither. And I had to hide Pokemon stuff when I was a little kid. I had like all this Pokemon contraband that I would hide.
Oh, no. I got to play Yu-Gi-Oh! And, yeah. and Pokemon. That was fine.
Right.
But not Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Wizards.
Yeah, that's so funny, man. So tongues, everything, non-denominational.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let me ask you this. Did you grow up experiencing like the feeling of like the Holy Spirit and like having that spiritual experience?
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that feeling playing music?
Yes.
Do you on a regular basis?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh God, it's like a can of worms. But it makes me feel, maybe this is controversial or whatever, or but it makes me sometimes think. Okay, so vibrations are a huge thing, okay? Like, literally, like, just vibrations. Like, everything. If you, like, stick your head in a big speaker and feeling those vibrations, or if you ever felt, like, your shirt move or something because something's so loud, that gives you, it literally vibrates your body and gives you a feeling. And that, I feel, generally causes emotion. Or can, because your body is feeling so much that it emotes. At least that's that's just the connections I've made in my own mind. I don't necessarily have any science or anything behind that,
right.
that are facts or whatever. That's just kind of me saying how I, what makes sense to me of that.
Right.
So my question is, and is like, when you're at church and you got all these people like raising their hands and falling out and the Holy Spirit, it's like, well, maybe you're just very moved by the music and the vibrations.
Mm. What if it's both those things?
That is also a possibility. And I'm not necessarily ruling that out either, but I've definitely felt emotional and similar feelings of what I used to feel in church at a very secular concert.
Yeah. Same.
I've gone to I do believe in energy and stuff. You know, I've gone to almost every time pre-COVID that I like went to a big concert at like American Airlines Center in Dallas, or when I went and saw John Mayer in 2017 at the Forum in LA. Like,
that's sick.
It, oh my gosh, I'm so great. But like, you're sitting in a room with 17,000 people all just pushing that energy out.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely was like moved to almost tears just sitting in that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's anybody's prerogative to call that God or vibrations or literally anything.
Yeah. The way I think about it is I think it's all of those things. I think, you know, God is God. Like, my understanding of God, the word God, to me, when I say that, I mean the universe. I mean the oneness of everything. And, you know, in these experiences in worship, and like I've had them with playing with my band, like it's like this, you know, it's like the unified field of consciousness, I think, is kind of what Einstein described it as, like, where here we are, all these perspectives, all these conscious beings at the same place, experiencing the same thing with the same intention, trying to have the same experience, and we connect for however long. We're all here together as one. And it's powerful, man. And like, it, you know, and I know that I'm sure you've experienced this playing with musicians, especially with musicians of your caliber. Like, you know, there's something that happens when, especially when you have a connection with people, like with me and Tanner and Harvey and Ian now too, especially with me, Tanner and Harvey, we've been playing together so long that like when we're playing, like we're not really, we're communicating in like some other way, non-verbally. Sure. We've played these songs a lot together too, but we can sit there. We'll do it live when we have to play for several hours, but we can kind of just freestyle and play together. And it's just like, we just know, you know, it's like we connect on this like deeper level than just the surface, you know? And it's like, I felt that exact same way, you know, that I used to feel like as a kid, you know, in worship services. Like, I feel lighter. I feel like this energy inside of me. And I feel like I literally like get, you know, the adrenaline chills. Like, it's
connected on a different frequency with your bandmates.
Yeah. Straight up, you know, and I think it's all those things. I think it's, you know, the sound, the emotion, the actual physical vibration of the sound waves hitting you, the unified consciousness part of it all with everybody. And I mean, to me, like that's, you know, that's a spiritual experience. Like that is, you know, how we experience God. You know what I mean? Like, I never experienced God like reading. I mean, you know, not to bash the Bible, because I think the Bible has some good stuff in it too, and you can hear from God, I think, everywhere. But like, those kind of experiences are way, way more tangible. And I have the same kind of experiences, like, you know, in meetings sometimes, in AA meetings, or working with sponsees, taking them through the 12 steps, where this thing just happens, where we click and we can connect on this, you know, shared pain and this thing that we went through. And to me, that's God, man. That's like, that's my whole premise of spirituality. Like, I try not to get lost too much on like the laws and the regulations and the religions and all that. But like that heart of that right there, that experience, like, to me is like, if I do that, the more I do that, the more I can build my life to have those experiences and give those experiences and be part of those experiences, closer I'll be to something better than I was. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the word is interchangeable.
Yeah.
God, universe, source energy, like literally. Source
consciousness.
Yeah, so there's a book by Jensen Sarrell called You Are a Badass. Hmm.
I have a copy of that somewhere, but I never read it.
I've read it like 4 or 5 times, and I underlined, highlighted, wore it out. It's one of my favorite books. Read it.
Yeah.
But it speaks about that, and talking about the interchangeability of the word, of like, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to say God, you could say universe, you could say literally whatever. And she says it, even in the book, she goes, eventually I turned into God, and it turned into that word for me was God. But she said, for this book, I'm not going to use it, because the word God, just that word, tends to have a lot attached to it.
Yeah.
And like, makes, sometimes can make a person uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just the word.
Oh, it has a lot of connotations. A lot of bad things have been done in the name of God.
Yeah. And
a lot of good, but.
Yeah, I mean, you can't count that out either, but I definitely do. For me, it's, I feel energy. I've felt it. And I don't dare put a name on it.
Yeah.
For me, I'm like I felt, I don't dare say it's this.
Right. Right.
Because I don't fucking know. Mm. I have guesses, but
nobody knows. You can ask, you can ask a
go die, and then then you can fucking
literally
know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean that rudely. I just mean like, you can't
go die. I'm gonna just cut that little part out.
The local musician tells people to fuck off and die.
But I mean, you could even ask a pastor of like 30 years enough questions to get him to the point where he'd be like, I don't know. You know, you could be like, well, what about aliens? And just like, I don't, eventually they'll hit, I don't know. Cause none of us really fucking know, you know, mm-mm. We know our own personal experiences, like spiritual experiences and life and crazy things that have happened that can't be coincidence or could be, you know, and, but nobody really knows, you know, mm-hmm. Like, all we have is this shared experience. And like, I love the way you said that, like, it's interchangeable, because that's I think we get lost in the, like, you know, when I went to rehab, one of my roommates was Muslim, and every morning we would read this like devotional together, and we'd pray together, and we would just like talk about spirituality and like us trying to get sober, and we were both heroin addicts, and like, it was fucking cool. It was a really cool experience. Like, it was different, you know, and it really shaped the way I thought about everything. Is like, we could put all these words on it and all these different books and interpretations of it, but really it's all the same shit, you know? And I would even argue that science and religion are trying to just understand the same thing, just everything, you know what I mean? And it's like the less we can stop worrying about the phrasing or the wording or the book, like, and the more we can just like start sharing these experiences with one another, we're going to like, you know, be closer to some kind of harmony, you know, in a fucking world in disarray and chaos and division right now. I think we need that more than anything, you know, but
yeah. I mean, it's mostly just, I don't know how to explain things. I know that I've felt it. I know that I've been in a guided meditation and felt God or energy. I can feel it in my hands right now. If I focus on my hands, I can bring energy to it and feel vibration. I just don't dare to give it a exact definitive name because I don't have that knowledge. And honestly, if whatever the thing is were to just appear right now in front of me and be like, I'm this, my little brain probably wouldn't still be able to comprehend. Like if the universe appeared to me in a humanoid form and said, yo, this is what happens, this is why you're here, all of this stuff, I'd still be like,
are you sure, bro?
Nah. Mostly I'd probably just be like, that doesn't make any sense, because I probably wouldn't even be able to understand it.
Right.
So, but then you get caught in these, and I've had this conversation with one of my friends, like, you get caught in this like in between part of like, even if that were to have, if I were to have every answer on the world, I wouldn't be able to understand it. But also I want to know.
Right.
Like, and if I did know, it would probably make me feel worse. You know, like, this is the answers to the universe. It'd be like, well, that fucking sucks.
it's like the answer is life is pointless and then you die and it's just black forever. What?
He's like, well, shit.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have the means to say, and I'm trying to get myself to the back. It's like, I feel like we go through this journey from when you're born of like trying to find it and then getting to a point where you realize you're never gonna.
Yeah.
And then trying to get back to not caring. Like, it's like, that's kind of how I see it in my head of like, I wonder. Oh, I'm never going to get that answer. Stop worrying about it.
Right.
Because I find I have spent, especially last year, and I think that's why I have all of these thoughts and I've had all these conversations with a bunch of people, is because, you know, I had a full year to just sit on my couch and think.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, like, have all of these thoughts of, well, I wonder what it is, but trying to get to back to the point of like, well, I mean, try your best to do what you love and be happy.
Yep.
And stop worrying about it.
Yep. If there's anything I've learned since COVID and the last election and everything, is like the importance of being present, right? In our relationships and on our day-to-day affairs.
Meditation.
Which I'm not super great with being consistent with meditation, but when I do, I'm always really amazed at how much better I feel. I went to a meditation meeting yesterday and I had a really great experience with it. But is one thing I've learned really, one thing that I've really tried to stick and hold on to throughout COVID and the election and everything, is like the importance of being present, not just like in yourself and in your body and in your life and in your day, but like in your community. You know, like, and just around you, like, you know, and that means that, you know, that means like, not only can you not exactly, you can waste a lot of time worrying about the federal government and the president and all that shit, but you can also spend a lot of time burning fucking energy and daylight thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow and next year and next week and 5 years from now. I'm not saying don't have a plan for your life and not be working towards some goals, but like, for me, and I'll use I statements, is like, a future trip a lot. I'd be like, well, what if I don't get through school? What if I don't get, you know, licensed to become a therapist? What if I don't do all this shit, you know, and I can spend a lot of time? And really, all that shit's an illusion. Like, none of that shit's real. Like, the future's not really real. Like, you know, yesterday is not even necessarily totally real. Like, all I really have is right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's just maybe in some weird collective way, the universe was trying to, like, force us all to pause and sit down and realize that lesson. And some of us may have gotten it. Some of us may have not, you know? And I don't know. It's been a weird fucking year. And it seems like... Seems like everybody in my circle and everybody around me and in my life, like, I don't know anybody that – I know some people that did pretty good through the pandemic and, like, are okay, you know, other than Jeff Bezos. Mostly everybody had something bad happen, though. You know what I mean? Like, most of us – and I don't mean just involving COVID. Like, I know a bunch of people that went through breakups last year, or, you know, and I know a lot of people that just, like – you know, I've known people that changed careers and changed majors and – it just seems like some kind of a shift happened, you know, whether for good or for bad, hopefully for good. And it just seems like it was just a year of turmoil, you know, and that's I think that's good and necessary for humans and consciousness. Like, whenever we have to go through turmoil, we have to go through shit. There's like there'll never be a shortage of external problems. And like, because of that, we have to like look inward and really work on ourselves. And like you were saying, you know, like taking walks, meditating, working on yourself, turning inward, really, you know, self-reflection, like working on the shit that is inside of us. Cause like we can only do so much to change the outside world, but we can do everything to change the internal.
Mm-hmm. Last year, which I think for as much as I enjoyed reading it, and I also on the other side hated fucking reading it. I read The Wisdom of Insecurity by Alan Watts.
Mm. I love Alan Watts. I was quoting him verbatim just then, like, you know, the future and the past don't exist, all that exists is present. You know, that's one of his quotes. And
yeah, well, it's gonna be a while before I read another Alan Watts book. I should have read it in 2019. Yeah. Like, it was the shit was too fresh in 2020 for me to read it. Like, it was good. The last chapter of the book was called Religion Reviewed, and I just stopped.
Yeah.
I was like, well, fuck this. I'm not going down. I'm not. Yeah. But one thing from that book that I really enjoyed was he talked about if you are constantly fixated on what next week's meals are going to be, you are not going to appreciate those meals when they become now, like present. If you are constantly looking over the shoulder of the what is in front of you, you're not going to actually ever be able to accurately appreciate what has come to you now, which I really enjoy that. It's basically just like a lesson in present moment. I like to think of somebody. I feel like this was a quote. I can't really. It might have been in You Are a Badass book, Jen Sincero, but the past and the present are not meant to, or sorry, the past and the future are not meant to be lived in, just visited.
Yeah.
So like the way that I see that for myself is, yes, like what you said, like, yeah, I'm not saying you don't have to have a plan for yourself, because yes, do have a plan and do have goals, but it's plant like a goal. Like, you visit the future and you go, this is where I want to be in 5 years. And then you come back to present and go, okay, now what do I do right now to get me in that direction of that goal? And the past, the point is, to when you come across a situation in the present that looks familiar from something that has happened before, you go, oh, okay, last time I did that and that didn't fucking work, so I'm gonna do something different now.
Yeah.
But if you're living in the past or living in the future, it's not gonna work out. I think living in the future just brings anxiety, because you're never gonna know what's actually going to happen, and living in the past can bring about depression, because you're never going to be able to change it.
Right.
So life only happens right now.
Yep.
But that's so fucking hard.
It's impossible. It's, I mean, we can preach about it. I really try to practice that every day, but it is really hard. But I think just the thought of like trying to remember that and like live by that every day is better than not knowing that lesson. You know what I mean? We're never going to get that down perfectly. We're never going to get to where we don't at least a little bit think about, oh, that shit happened, you know, last month was terrible or whatever, that last breakup or, you know, but you're like, okay, wait, it's fine. Nothing. I'm fine. Like, I'm fine right this second. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just keep moving forward and just try to enjoy what you have right this second, like you said. You know, I really like that. So let me ask you this. Oh, go ahead.
If I can say one more thing, and that is, so there's a YouTube channel and called The Mindful Movement, and I don't listen. If I'm listening to a guided meditation, I'm listening to them.
Right.
It's Les and Sarah Raymond. I think
I've heard some of their stuff.
They're from, I'm not going to say because I can't remember the exact state and I don't want to say the wrong name.
I've done a couple of those meditations.
They're amazing. Yeah. Anyways, they also have a podcast, and some of them are on Spotify, and I listened to one, and they do just interviews with some people, and I listened to this one lady, I don't remember what her name was, but she said, if you find yourself, you know, you're doing something, and you find yourself just lost in, like, the future or the past, she said, breathe and re-arrive into the moment that you're in. And I really enjoyed that. So like, you, through your breath, re-arrive to the moment that you are in. Cause most of the time, the moment you're in right now isn't bad.
Yeah. Like
you're sitting on your couch with like a 1,000-yard stare thinking about like the cringy thing you did last week and like freaking out about it. But like, I think what she says in the interview is, if you know, if you're sitting there washing the dishes and you find yourself freaking out about what's going to happen next week with that interview you really want to crush but are scared about, she goes, breathe through your breath, re-arrive into this moment, and just do the damn dishes. Focus on washing that fork. You know, just breathe through your breath, re-arrive to the moment. And I try to think about that a lot whenever I find myself lost in either the past or the future. It's like, okay, breathe and re-arrive into what you're doing. What are you doing? Oh, well, I'm watching TV. Okay, this show's pretty nice.
Do you ever realize you're on autopilot when you're playing gigs? Like, it doesn't happen very much. Like, if it's a gig I'm not particularly, like, enjoying a whole lot, you know, like, either the crowd is not great or, like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't happen too frequently, but it does happen sometimes where I'm playing, I'm singing, I'm doing everything fine, but I'm also thinking about other shit. Like, it doesn't happen too much to me. Most of the time I'm pretty good about, because I'm usually so excited to play. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, like, you know, if it's not a gig, if it's like a 3-hour gig where I'm like, you know, basically the jukebox, I'm like,
yeah,
you know, I'll kind of get like.
Well, that's most of my gigs. I'm the 3-hour live radio.
Yeah.
Sometimes I watch the TV.
Yeah. Well, you're just...
I'll be like playing, singing a song. And, like, there's just, like, the news is on. I'm like, man, that's crazy.
They shot another one? No.
And then I'm like, oh, shit, I'm playing. I mean, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's because I'll be like, oh, what's the next word?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like if you're at a gig where you're stoked to be there, good crowd, they're like actually actively watching you and stoked to be there, like, man, that's exhilarating. It's the best shit ever, dude. Fuck
yeah. It's great. That, even if it's only 5 people, you're like, man,
yeah, I would rather have 5 people who are super stoked or 5 people that are singing along with our songs than fucking 300 that could care less, you know. Like, I would way rather fucking, but you know, usually if you've got a good crowd, like, they're there for a show. I mean, like, even if they don't know you, like, it's just a vibe, you know. Like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Yes Man, the movie, Jim Carrey?
You know, when I was like 16 or 17, I took a girl to that, and we walked out to, you know, do other stuff.
Zoe Deschanel is in it. She's in a band, and I think the scene that sticks out the most to me in that movie is she like walks out and there's this big in like intro to her like really dramatic coming out onto the stage, and then she comes out and there's like the entire place is empty except for like five people standing in a line in front of the band. She goes, "Jake, Penelope, Rachel, Ryan, good to see you," like on the stage. And they're all screaming. And I was like, that's totally, that's it, that's right there.
That's so sick. I love that. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird when you get in that headspace and you're just like, you know, you can't get out of it. Oh, I was going to ask you this. What is like the most visceral experience that you've had through meditation?
What do you mean?
Like visceral, like, I mean, like what, have you ever gotten to the point where you see stuff? Have you ever gotten to the point where you like, I'll tell you what happened to me yesterday. I've gotten to the point in meditation where I've had visualizations, like, and I don't know, like, I don't say that as like somebody who's an expert in meditation, because I'm pretty bad about being consistent with it. I think the longest I've gone doing it every day was like close to a month. But I usually do at least, you know, a couple times a week. But yesterday I went to a meditation meeting, which is like, it's like a 12-step meeting, but we just do a guided meditation. And then after that, we'd like share and talk about how we experienced it. And yesterday we did one, and it was like, it was kind of different. And I liked it. And I'm a lot of people at the meeting hadn't done one like this, but the app I used to use was like this. It's just a guy talking, no music or nothing. No, you know, no ethereal music. And I was like kind of tired, and that helped a lot to like really clear my head. So like I was just there in the meditation, and I was just like thinking. I was listening to it, and if a thought would come, I would just like, you know, all right, and just come right back to my focus. But then after probably about 10 minutes, like I, you know, got to that place where my vision like went, you know, black, like fully, like I was focused down, like I could really feel completely focused for a while. And then my hands, like I stopped feeling my hands. I could feel my feet still, like not like numb or anything. Like I just didn't have any feeling. Like, and eventually the awareness of my body went away completely. And I like wasn't thinking about anything, but I was just hearing the words, and I just completely lost like physical sensation in my body. Vision was totally like black, like, and it was daylight still. So there was daylight coming in, and I could just hear the meditation, and like the rest of it went by really quick. And then we were done and we talked, and I was like, whoa, it was just like, I've had them before where I can like visualize something, or I have like a visualization come over me that I can kind of see, but just to lose complete awareness of my body for a while was really different. I don't know. It was weird. Like I hadn't gotten to that point ever. But I don't know. Have you ever experienced anything like that, or what's like your most deepest feeling that you've gotten through meditation?
Yeah. So I had made, it was starting, I believe, July 5th of last year. I decided to try to do a year of meditating every day.
That's awesome.
I made it to 9 months.
That's sick.
And I'm kind of pissed at myself for letting it go, but whatever. 9 months is a lot. And then I got a tattoo, which the tattoo makes me feel bad too.
Why?
Because it's like,
it's like a spiritual watch.
It's like, did you meditate, bro?
Did you
like,
balance the chakras? Because they're like, balanced on your arm. They're aligned.
Like, don't go away. No, but I have definitely kind of like, there's been a few where I like definitely have like kind of, I don't know how to say it, left my body. Not necessarily. Like, there was one in like specifically where, because I like to lay down when I meditate. I don't like sitting up because I feel like I can breathe deeper when I'm laying flat, and it's a little easier for me. And so I was laying down, and I kind of got to this like, and I think it's just you get so relaxed that it felt like my body was asleep, but my mind was aware.
Right.
And it kind of felt like my consciousness kind of came up and was like looking at myself be asleep.
Wow.
This is what it felt like. I don't necessarily know if it was that, but that's what it felt like for the whole time. And then I remember whenever I was listening to a guided meditation, and whenever they're like, okay, now we're going to come back slowly, come back to your body. And it literally felt like it was coming back into myself. Yeah. You know, make some small movements with your fingers and your toes, and like around your eyes and move your eyebrow, you know, that type of stuff. I literally felt like I had went from up here to like slipping back in.
Wow.
It was weird. I mean, great, but also weird. I liked it, and it also scared me. Right. But the thing I liked the most with with meditations is feeling vibrations, because you can move energy in your body. If you focus on the palms of your hands, I bet you can like really focus on moving energy there. Mm-hmm. You can start to feel like either heat or like a buzzing or a vibration in that area of your body. And it's kind of just doing that. And then the other thing is listening to the indications that your body is giving you, whether like whatever it is, like your bladder just gave you an indication, hey, you need to pee.
Right.
Or yeah. Your calf goes, scratch me. Or like,
yeah,
whatever. It's just being aware and of being in your body. Mm-hmm. And it's different. It's like noticing them instead of just like
reacting.
I have an itch.
Yeah.
Scratch it.
Right.
More just being like, my body just gave me a notification to do something, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's like, have you ever tried to do like the lucid dreaming meditations? Like,
no, I don't fuck with lucid dreaming.
Really?
No, that scares me.
Why?
I don't want to get stuck.
Did you ever have sleep paralysis? Is that why you say that?
I have.
Oh, that makes sense. I've never experienced that, so I don't.
I don't like it. I don't have like a sleep paralysis demon, like some people say, but there have been times where I have been asleep and not been able to really wake myself up, and that always terrifies me. And I'm always like so fucking stressed when I actually get out of it.
Yeah.
So I just don't fuck with that.
Yeah. Well, and like I've never had the sleep paralysis, but like I've done a bunch of lucid dreaming like guides, and I've lucid dreamed, I don't know, probably like less than 20 times in my life. I'm not good at it. I can't do it all the time, but I've been able to a few times. And I never can control the whole dream, but I can kind of control a little bit of it. I'll realize I'm dreaming and I can start doing shit. But the same thing will happen. It's so weird. You'll do these meditations to get you in, to get your body asleep, keep your mind awake. And when you're like in that weird space, your body will send messages to try to like get you to move, to wake yourself up. Like it'll try to get you to scratch your face. It'll try to get you to twitch your leg or move your leg, or like, and it's literally just your body being checking. Like, are you asleep right now? Are you asleep right now? Like, what's up? Like, are we moving or are we laying? Are we sleeping? Like, what's up? Your brain's not asleep, but you're like, your body's getting tired. Like, what are we doing? It's weird. And like, you know, I really like that you said, like, just listening to your body, really feeling that. It's a trip, but.
Yeah. It's like a lesson in present moment. Stuff, or like you know, I've done some guided meditations where it's like, okay, sit here and you get your body relaxed, and then you're like, now just listen to the sounds around you. What is the closest thing that you can hear? And then it's like, oh, the fan. Okay, now what's the furthest thing you can hear? Well, a car just drove by past my house. Like, yeah. Just being in the moment, which was like huge for me in 2020. Because I was so scared of the future, because it's like, well, is my craft going to be a thing?
Yeah.
Like, is what I do that makes that my passion, the thing that lights me up inside that I chose to do every day for the rest of my life, and I can't, is this going to be gone? Do I just have to do I just need to change my life now?
Yeah.
And that was a lot. Yeah. So
I think we all had that. We all felt that way. Cause like, you know, we were on tour when COVID started hitting. And I was like, oh, well, we got one in. Like, I don't know if it'll ever come back. And it really hasn't came back fully yet. I mean, we're not really through all of it yet, but, and it was scary, man. Like, it's not only to think of it as like a professional, but also as a consumer, like, fuck dude. Like, are we ever going to be able to go to shows again? Like, mm-hmm. It sucks, man. Like, and to me, that's like, oh, you can have all the other shit. You can take the fucking Xboxes and the smartphones and the Wi-Fi. Like, fuck, I don't, like, I would rather like lose that shit and be able to still like keep the, you know, the shows and the art and the, being human together and, mm-hmm. you know, being in the same room as people and doing things together as a whole, you know, group. And mm-hmm. you can keep all the other shit if I really, you know, had it my way. But it's scary for sure.
Yeah. Well, and then at this point, you could go in and talk about, oh God, the whole what is essential jobs and what isn't, and how artists got labeled as non-essential.
Yeah, it's fucked.
And that really just chapped my fucking ass, because I was like, okay, tell me, the fuck did you do when you were sitting at your house? You watched TV? You listened to music? I mean, maybe you did some work on your whatever. But, like, take the arts away if they're not essential. Take them away. If you're happy with sitting and staring at the floor for 5 months, then great. Arts are non-essential. But most people were listening to music, watching art. Like, that is all arts.
Yep.
And, yeah, so it's non-essential bullshit. There's a statistic that Stacy Keith from Lubbock Cultural Arts Foundation, she gave... I'm trying to remember who did all of this research. I can't off the top of my head right now, but I think it was for all revenue in Texas, in the state of Texas in 2019, $46 billion of revenue came from the arts.
Wow.
$46 billion.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Arts are non-essential.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Also, if you think about like big festivals,
it's fucking heart of some town's economy.
Dude, I'm telling you, people hear festival and go, oh, just a bunch of fucking cuckoos on Molly.
White girls, you know, with headdresses pretending they're Cherokee.
giving hugs and kissing people. No, it's
putting Molly up their ass. Yeah. You ever done that?
No, not done what?
Put Molly up your ass?
No.
Have you ever thought about it?
Not until just now when you said it. But, like, you think about it. So even just mine, this first year, actually, I'm not going to say that. Thinking about...
Yeah, you were going to say a number, and you better don't.
Yeah. Like, so you got ACL, for example. That you think about printables, so like flyers and posters and all of the stuff that people print out that goes, like, probably a community person has those printables. Boom, there you go for that. Then you have how many people do you think attend ACL?
We can Google it.
Let's see here. I'm curious.
2019 was the last year they probably did it, right?
Yeah.
75,000 people.
75,000 people. And not all of that is Austin, right? Just Austin locals. No. So you think about hotels.
People come from all over the world for that festival. Mm-hmm. It's a big festival.
Or with any festival. Coachella, because that's a huge one, right? Like, hotels come up, are erected because of that. Then you have Uber. Then you have alcohol. Then you have all food.
Parking.
Mm-hmm. All, like, the city with a major festival makes so much fucking bank off of festivals. And most of the time, the festival people probably aren't making that much.
No. And you got to think of how many people that employs and, like, you know, like, and that's a crazy thing. I was reading an article the other day is how, you know, roadies and those kinds of dudes and people who work, you know, festivals, tours, they, like, you know, stage hands, all this stuff. Like, when COVID hit, they all went and found new jobs. And so now we're going to have a shortage of stage hands, roadies, all these jobs that people do normally. They all have found other careers or went elsewhere or did whatever. And stuff's going to start coming back, and we're going to have like this huge, you know, empty hole of, you know, they're going to need stagehands, they're going to need roadies. And so, I mean, that's good for some people, it's an opportunity, but it's like, fuck, man, some people had to change their whole life up, you know? And like, I don't know what the answer is, because we definitely needed to do something to try to mitigate some of the COVID stuff, you know, but I don't know. It's real dicey. And I think the argument could be made that shutting down businesses, you know, shutting down the arts, shutting people out from going to be able to go, you know, finish their living out their dream. You know, if they just, they have a business that they run or play music or whatever, like is more dangerous. I think it's more dangerous. I don't know. You know,
I don't either. I mean, yeah. And I'm not really going to say either, but yeah. I'm not, cause I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I know that it sucked ass.
Yeah.
But there wasn't probably a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No.
So all my whole point was that the arts are essential.
I agree.
To a community.
Mm-hmm. I think just to human life and human consciousness and sanity and spirituality and, like, you know, you never know how we I don't think we could ever really understand, because we would never, unless we lived in a world that was totally gray without any kind of arts or any kind of higher, you know, experience of art and what it can give us, like, we wouldn't know how actually essential it is. Like, if we really mm-hmm. could, if we could actually go, we should do it. Go a whole day with no, like, not consuming any art, no music, don't look at any paintings, don't read anything, don't watch anything. I'd be brutal. Like, I don't think I've ever done that in my life. Maybe not even in jail, because even in jail, you get to watch TV usually a little bit every day. You know what I mean? Like, or read. So, you know, it's, I mean, to me, and that, you know, not to sound like a fucking communist over here, this happens a lot on this podcast, but, like, to me, money and stuff is, like, not the most important thing about life. To me, like, life is all about experience. And, like, you know, if we could realize that and put value on actual things that are actually valuable and make everything a little bit different the way it works, maybe it wouldn't be, I don't know, maybe it would be different.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I do my best to view money as a tool,
for sure,
not necessarily as the end all be all.
No,
and I realize that that can be offensive to some people who really, really need it.
Yeah,
but that's not how I mean it. I'm just more of a deal of. I'm a firm believer in Oh my god. The law of attraction.
Yeah.
And what you're thinking about, what you're putting out is coming back to you. Mm-hmm. So
agreed. And well, I say that to mean, like, I didn't finish my full point, I guess. Like, I in my perfect world, like, if a lot of people, if most people, if all people didn't have to worry about money so much, and we all just had, like, way more free time, like, we could just make so much fucking art, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the real value in life, is, like, experiences and art and just, like, higher plane of spirituality and, like, higher forms of expression, you know? Like, and that was one thing that kind of, like, is interesting with COVID, is, like, we're all forced to be shut in our homes. The government's, like, you know, the rest of the world, they, you know, subsidize wages and send people home. And, like, you know, it'd be amazing to see what kind of world we could live in, where, you know, Andrew Yang talked about it a little bit, like, universal basic income, like, where everybody gets a certain amount of money to pay a certain amount of bills or whatever, and then we have more free time to create and do all these things. Like, just imagine a world full of artists, you know what I mean? Like, just 99% of us as artists, you know? It'd be amazing. I don't know. But, yeah.
That does sound very communist.
Yeah, that was my full point, and I was like, yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, you know, we sat here for 20 minutes talking about how everything is connected and the universe is all one thing, and money is just another form of that. It's just energy, for sure.
Dude, I was talking to my dad, he just mentally, like, he said something that just fucking lit me up. He just said, oh, man, we got on the topic of thoughts. Mm. And he goes, well, what is a thought? And I was like, he goes, a thought is energy. When you just have a thought pop into your fucking head, it's like, where did that come from? I don't know. Maybe some scientist could tell me that this portion of my brain decided to do this thing and blah, 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 but I don't know. But, yeah, it's just, thoughts are just energy. So if I don't know where I was going with that.
You said your dad heated, got you heated by saying that.
No, not heated. That's not what I meant. Oh, okay. I meant just like, yeah, I meant like.
I was expecting like some boomer Christian thing about capitalism.
No. Not at
like,
all.
I was waiting for it. I was like, yeah.
No, when I say lit me up, I just meant like.
Yeah, in a good way.
I was like thinking about it for like weeks type of a thing.
I agree. I mean, fuck, as. And my, you know, my dad's like similar, and we've had conversations like that too. And he, you know, he will even go as far as to think that, like, you know, is there actually any original thoughts, or has, you know what I mean? Because has every thought ever been thought before? You know, I don't know. I think there's like some scripture that says that there is no original thought. He always used to say it when I was a kid. I was like, that's crazy. I don't know.
All I know is that. As far as when thoughts go, I can't really help where they come from, but I can help whether or not my reaction to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas thought comes up in your head like, boom, you're a piece of shit. It's like, okay, well, I can accept
Did
that.
Did you hear that too just now? What the fuck?
It's like, I can accept that thought or I can choose to not.
Yeah.
The choice is hard.
Right.
And can be hard, but
yeah.
The most beautiful thing in life is the fact that we have the capability to choose how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to choose a different feeling than the one that you have, though.
Yeah.
I'll say, like, if you're, it's like, oh, I feel really jealous right now. It's really hard to choose to not be jealous.
Yeah. Well, and that's like. As a person in recovery, you know, all of us in recovery and all of us who suffered from addiction, you know, we spent our life before we get sober running from feelings and medicating to not feel certain things, right? And so the real truth of recovery is not about changing the way we feel with other things, like, because we can get sober, but we can still change the way we feel with sex and food and all this other stuff, right? The real true sobriety, if you will, is learning to just sit with those feelings. Like, you feel sad, sit with it. Let it wash over you until it goes away. And I'm not saying that I'm great at it. I'm better than ever, but I'm not perfect at it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, in that, that's a real motherfucker right there, dude. You know, just sit with your anxiety, sit with your grief or your sadness. And here's another point with that I think is really interesting. Did you ever watch The Midnight Gospel?
Not all of it, but some.
You need to watch it. I think you'd love it. There's one episode where they talk about death, and they talk about how in American culture, as soon as somebody dies, they're like, get it out of here. Get the body. Go. Take it. Put it in the morgue until we're ready to bury it. But in a lot of older ancient cultures and other cultures in the world, when somebody dies, you sit with the body for a while. You just sit. You just sit with it. You know, and I think it's really powerful, man. Like, imagine what our conception of death and life and everything could mean if we were just to sit literally with the person we just watched die. Just sit with that body for a little bit and just, like, let that feeling resonate with us and just sit with it and experience it for what it really is. Because without death, life, like, doesn't really mean anything, right? If we just went on living forever, it wouldn't be finite. It wouldn't have the same weight and gravity to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like
be a happiness. Lot of shitty people.
Yeah. It'd be a lot of Bezos.
More shitty people.
Yeah. Right? I don't know how he is, but I'm just saying there'd be like people with, you know, amass wealth and all these things. And who knows? But, and I don't remember what I was going to say after that.
The experiencing the feeling of sitting with people.
Sitting with death. Sitting,
yeah.
I lost it.
Yeah.
We went pretty deep so far.
Yeah.
And we really kind of tied it back, I think, to the importance of the arts and how it is a necessity for happiness, joy, life. Oh, I was going to say same thing with happiness is like, we wouldn't be as happy if we didn't feel sad shit and go through bad shit, you know, life. Mm-hmm. It's yin and yang, right? We have to have both those things. But
yeah,
you know, you touched on like, you know, art as a necessity and like how it really, we both agreed, like that's like the best things in life are art and music and, you know, movies and TV and writing and visual art and just like all of it, you know? And like, so I think it's really great that you know, we both can agree on that. We believe that. And like, here we are promoting this festival that's coming in August, like, and its whole purpose is to give back to the arts community, give to people who can take the money we raise and take the donations and all that and make more art with it, you know, mm-hmm. and like make more life with it, you know?
And also to give a chance for people to know what art is already here.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it really bothers me. And you're from here, right? You grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from Snyder, so, you know, West Texas. Like, I, you know, I meet tech kids. They're like, oh, dude, Lubbock sucks, dude. They only have like two sushi places, dude, or whatever, you know. I don't know why I went that voice with it. And I'm just like, bro, you don't know how good you have it. Like, where I'm from, there's nothing, dude. There's like a skate park. There's a Walmart. And there's like, you know, drugs, alcohol, and teen pregnancy. That's fucking it, you know. And, like, you know, I get it. Like, I love going to Dallas. I love going to Austin. There's a lot to do. It's fucking awesome. But, like, you know, it's really as bad or as good as you make it. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot to do if you really just try. Like you said earlier, mm-hmm. you know, if you actually go out of your way to look for the shit. But it's also our job as musicians and artists to, like, make it easy for them. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really good festival. And
yeah, I'll say. Yeah. Well, one way I can connect that is when I started my first year in like gigging full time, I had this, I don't know, kind of up on my high horse type deal of like, I'm just gonna wait for the phone to start ringing with them gigs. And then I kept waiting and the phone never rang.
Yep.
And I didn't get any gigs for a while. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna start calling places. And so for as much as I would wish that people would go out and find it, at the same time it's like, well, nah, whatever, I have the means to help them.
Yeah,
might as well just do my part and share it.
Yeah,
instead of being on my high horse and be like, well, no, you should come out and know that my show is here. Mm-hmm. It's like, fuck off.
No, I mean, fuck, nobody's gonna know unless you tell them, you know.
Like, exactly.
Every show I play, I like with the big ones like that I put on, like I try to do everything I can to let people know, you know? And like, I never take offense if somebody's like, oh, I don't want to go to that. I'm just like, all right, it's cool, man. I'll find the people that do, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I'll find the people that actually do. And like, it's like you said, I agree with the law of attraction and that whole principle behind that of like, you know,
positive energy and frequencies.
Absolutely. And like, you know, as a musician, like I played a lot of gigs for free, for exposure, you know, for like just to have a little bit of success as a local band that we have, like, you know, and you just keep doing it. And it's not like, never got into it because I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be fucking famous and rich, dude. Like, I never did that. I've always just want to play, like, and you know, because I've had that attitude, I've got to do some really cool shit with music. I got to go on tour with my fucking best friends. I got to, you know, I've gotten to play some really cool venues, you know, around the state and meet a lot of really cool people and bands and just have some really fun experiences. And for me, like as a fucking recovering addict, you know, who was an IV drug user and, you know, all that, like I should have died. I could have and should have died a long time ago. So everything else is a bonus. Like, and the more I just am like, man, like the more grateful I am for the little, the experiences I get to have and the joy I get to have, like the better it is, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I had some good exposure for lunch today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was delicious. Went to the store with all my exposure and
it sucks. It sucks to be told that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, I'm being a bitch, but
a little bit.
Yeah. So all the artists in at my festival, just side plug, are being paid.
Yeah, for sure.
Because why would you have an arts festival to benefit the arts but not pay your artists?
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, man. Well, I think that's also your album. When did your album come out?
April 30th.
April 30th.
It's called The Mess We Made.
The Mess We Made. Shit Our Pants.
Yeah.
And then the show is?
April. Wait, what show?
The Lubbock Live.
Oh, August 28th.
August 28th.
I'm having an album release show.
When?
On April 30th. Sick. When the album comes out.
Where at?
It's a house show.
Sick.
Yeah. I'm not going to say the address on the mic.
Put the address on here. And who's put the address, whose house it is, their last four of their social, and their mother's maiden name.
Okay, well, it's my house.
Oh, okay.
And my mother's maiden name is Barry. This is all the info I'm putting on here.
It could be Barry with an A, Barry with an E. We don't know.
Go look it up.
All right, buddy. Well, I really enjoyed this, dude. It's cool to sit down with you and talk about all the things we have in common, and it's been fun. So thanks for coming and doing this.
Yes, for sure. Thanks for having me. I had a good time.
Cool. Well, thanks, y'all.